I'm Laura Vinroot Poole of Capital, and this is What We Wore. The partnership of Lily Clemson and Michel Contin of Lily Eve is a true example of alchemy. After an unlikely meeting during the pandemic and making masks together, they began upcycling vintage Hermes blankets and towels into clothing, and a business was born. Their love of their work and each other feels like the reason their venture has been so successful. So Michelle, you're in East Hampton, and Lily, you're in Manhattan?
Yeah.
Lily, where are you from?
I'm originally from London.
How did you get to Manhattan and East Hampton?
So I moved to New York when I was 18 to go to Parsons School of Design to study graphic design, and basically then decided to never leave, never went back to London, and have stayed in New York ever since.
Always in the creation side and designing?
Yeah, I obviously studied graphic design, and all my internships were in fashion, mainly under graphic design, and always had a love of fashion and wanting to be in the industry.
And did you have internships, or had you worked anywhere in fashion?
Yeah, I interned at Moda Operandi. I was their graphic design intern. I also did some interning at Goop for a while, and I basically would do a lot of freelance graphic design work while I was at school. So I would just assist companies on, you know, editorial or e-commerce work.
In the Parsons training, what was the most important part of that training?
There was actually a huge emphasis on sustainability and really trying to incorporate that into your daily practice or moving forward with any business you wanted to go into. I was always drawn to printmaking, and I would spend a lot of time in the silkscreen printing studio, and really always wanted to try and work in that realm of design and patterns, and the more patterns, the better.
And while you were in school, what did you think your trajectory would be? I mean, did you think you would go into graphic design somewhere in a big firm?
That's exactly what I thought. I was right in the middle, before COVID hit, of going through, I think I'd gone through five or six rounds of interviews at Estee Lauder. And I thought I would get a graphic design position there and try work my way up one of those corporate companies. And that was really what I'd always visioned for myself. So when COVID hit, it really was just the right place and right time for me to be thrown into what is now Lily Eve.
And did you come from a family of entrepreneurs? I mean, is that natural to you?
I mean, I come from very driven parents. They both have a strong emphasis on, you know, work hard to achieve what you'd like to achieve. And it's still a very family run business. My mom is my mom manager / pop up, and not even intern, pop up everything and packaging. And my dad helps me with CFO and finance. My mom, I would say, has definitely got that entrepreneurial streak. She was in radio and TV back in England. So I was definitely brought up around a family that works.
So tell me about the pandemic and how that upended everything and how you moved towards this path.
When the pandemic hit, I was at the time living in New York, and I went and moved back with my parents, who were currently at the time living in East Hampton. And really, probably like a lot of people my age, I was 23 at the time, I think, I just wasn't working, was trying to think of what I could do and pass the time and also help. It was such a hopeless time. And my mum had been given 4 or 5 Hermes beach towels that had been passed down to her through her mother. And at the time, I just was always drawn to their print and design, and really had no idea of what the value of an Hermes towel was or what it cost. And just looked at them one day and thought, I'm going to cut these up and make them into face masks.
And did you ask your mom first?
I asked my mom because I knew she'd say yes. I didn't ask my dad because he knew how much they were. So I asked her, and my dad was more in the lines of, you better make this work because these towels then told me what a towel costs from Hermes. And I ended up making these face masks with the help of Michelle. We raised $10,000 for Food Bank New York, wow, which was just, you know, really great and felt great to do during that time. But it also then opened the doors of introducing us into this world of upcycling luxury products. I was lucky enough to be based in an area that had a very luxury customer clientele living in the Hamptons. And by starting with the masks and then bucket hats, slowly I would have people reach out to me and say, can you take my towel and make it into a jacket? And then it allowed me to just really test and see if this is something that's needed in the market.
And had you known Michelle? I mean, did y'all know each other from the Hamptons before this?
No, I wish I had. People ask us all the time if we're related. I mean, he is family to me, but he's not my father or my grandfather. But I did not, unfortunately, know him prior to COVID. I was asking, I'm an awful sewer myself. I wish I was better, but I'm really, it's not my strongest talent. And when the face masks were really, orders were building up, I needed help with the production. And my mom had got like carpal tunnel in her hand from doing all the sewing. We were like, we've got to find someone who can do this better. And at the time we asked around locally and they introduced me to Michelle. And I thought I was going to meet a, you know, woman in the Springs named Michelle. And I the chicest French man I've ever met.
My hair turned white.
And Michelle, when you first saw the masks that Lily had made, what were your first thoughts?
To tell you, I frankly don't quite remember. I know they were not happy with their work. Let's look at it that way. And I had never made anything like that, so I didn't know if they would be happy with mine either.
We were very happy with his work. It was taking my mom and I something like, I'm not even joking when I say like 5 hours to sew 10. And I said to my mom, I don't want to overwhelm him, but maybe I could just drop him like 20, 25 hours and he'll be done in a few days. I think we got home like 25 minutes later and he's like, done, you can come and pick them up whenever you would like.
And from that moment where you were like, wait, there may be something here. And did you go to his workroom and everything? Had you seen all of that there was a capacity to do this?
No. So actually, because it was the height of the pandemic at that time, and given, he won't mind me saying, given his age, I didn't want to go in his home. It was, you know, pre us knowing a lot. So
yeah,
I spent pretty well, I think it was a good 4 months until I went physically inside his house and saw the basement. I obviously knew about it. He told me as we start to get to know each other, but I hadn't seen it at that time.
Michelle, will you tell us a little bit about you and where you're from?
I'm French Canadian. I was born in Quebec City.
How had you become interested in fashion? Are you formally trained?
I always liked fashion. It never occurred to me to do anything else, but I used to make costumes at one point, and then decided I had a friend of mine that I used to work in double knit wool.
Were your parents supportive?
My father, yes. My mother didn't want me to even have a pin in the house. She refused categorically. And that was a big handicap because I had to do these things behind her back. But unfortunately, she died very, very young. And therefore, I should say that it gave me freedom to do what I wanted to do. After London, I came to New York.
Were you doing fashion at that time?
Not really. No, not. Not at all. I was very interested. I knew quite a few people who were in the business. But with me, I was very serious about that. And strangely enough, I to pay some of the expenses without me going to my little savings or whatever. I was a translator at one point in a company from English to French. But what happened is I came to New York, and then I worked with a company that made costumes. Ray Diffen was the name of the company. It was for the theater. They did mostly 16th, 17th century armors and things like that. And
oh, wow.
Then the owner of the company obviously went to a party of some sort and started meeting people from Broadway. So they asked him, and of course, I'm sure it was very good for him. So then I did quite a lot of work in shows like Funny Girls. For example, I did all the wedding dresses, the 10 wedding dresses in one of the scenes, and made a dress for Elizabeth Taylor when she got married to Burton the second time in Canada.
That was the prettiest one.
It was a yellow, very jonquil yellow.
Yes.
Do you remember?
I do remember. Yes, yes. And tell me about that. And what was that like?
We did not know who it was for. I used to work with a woman, a Spanish lady, Mrs. Ibran. She was sort of basically my boss. And I did a lot of finishings and that type of thing. She had done the cutting for it. But we were wondering, the whole place was wondering, because there was a fuss made about that. And Elizabeth Taylor came, I think, a couple of times incognito in a different room where we couldn't even look at the door. So
I love that.
For fitting. And then we found out it was that. And then after that, I started my own little company. There was an American designer that told me, he said, Michelle, you should make, it was the time where unisex was happening. And so in the village in New York, I used to do things for stores there, tank tops, bathing suit, that type of things. And it just went like a volcano. Unbelievable.
Michelle, what was the fabric mostly that you were working with at this time? Is this and this is the 70s?
At that point, it was double knit.
Double
wool.
Knit, yeah.
Wool. So it was stretchy. And one thing that I didn't know, and all of a sudden a few people started complaining in the stores, is that these double knits had been dyed. But they were not dye proof. So when you got wet with one of the bathing suits, if you had the purple bathing suit, you were purple.
You should have just made that a selling point, you know, be purple with your suit.
You and Wayne, how did you get to the Hamptons?
Oh, well, that's the thing is that I had a studio, and then I graduated to a rather large studio because I was doing clothes for boutiques when the boutiques were fantastic on Madison and Third Avenue in those days. That was the thing. So I did a lot of stuff for them, and therefore I had a big studio in New York, and I had from 9 to 11 ladies working for me.
Wow.
My partner was at Time and Life as a book designer. And a friend of his who worked there, she said, his name was Wayne Young, and she said, Wayne, Michelle is going to lose his shirt because he gives credit to all of these people, and some of them are children, the father gave them a business to do together. So she said, why don't you do something in the Hamptons? Now, that was behind my back. I didn't know any of that. So she invited us for a weekend in Sag Harbor. So we looked Sag Harbor, too small, too close to each other. Southampton, we didn't care that much. Came to East Hampton, and the first turn that we do on Newtown Lane, there was an old garage that was about to fall apart, huge, and it said for rent. And now I know, but Wayne scribbled the number that was in the morning. By the afternoon, we had met the owner, and we were now the proud renter. With 6 months paid in advance of a store in East Hampton.
And did you know what you were going to make? You didn't have a collection already.
We did the famous unisex to start.
Right.
Being unisex and being my partner was a very, very handsome young man. There were a couple of guys that were trying bathing suits and things. And I received a phone call. That was a Sunday afternoon. And Michelle, I don't want to sell. I won't say the word, but then we, let's say, to young men anymore. And I said, so what do you want me to do? And he said, I'll put everything aside. Could you come and pick it up? And, you know, we get out of it. And then we'll be a store for women. So I said, okay. He called. I went, picked it up. Huge boxes of stuff. Went to the dump and threw it.
Wow.
Then the week after, some very beautiful women came in and, oh, is that all you have, casual and things like that? So Wayne was all the time after my mother died, she used to dress haute couture. My father's brother-in-law said to him, you should sell those dress, those things of your wife. He said, this is worth a fortune. And my father said, I am not selling my wife's thing at all. I said to him, I said, there are two or three things that I like. Can I take them? And he said, sure. So two were dresses and one was a suit. And so I took them all by part, you know, it was all I had.
Wow.
So took them all by part and rolled them up as patterns. And I've traveled with those all over South America and everything.
Wow.
They were in my luggage all the time. So in East Hampton, Wayne said, he said, what about those famous patterns, for example, that you had? Couldn't we make something? I said, never thought of that, sure. We went to New York, bought the most fabulous fabric. We found a place that had left over all the couturier. You know, believe me, we had so many ladies coming to the store, and they were all professional ladies, lawyers and judges and doctors and things. And they wanted to dress properly. And the suits in those days were either the shoulders were down there, or that they wanted something feminine, but that looked serious.
And Michelle, is this the 70s or the 80s? What year are we?
So that was 1970, Lacey, something.
The revolution of women going to work. And yeah, amazing.
And then at that time, our suits were probably between $400 and $500, which was rather a lot of money in those days. And all of a sudden, and we had a lot of clients. The store was filled with clothes, but not full that you didn't see anything. Everything right. was on different hangers, and you could see when you walked in, you could see what it was. There used to be a lady that used to come in and sit there, quite charming lady, and she kept on talking about, oh, and my Calvin did this, and my Calvin did that, and my Calvin did this, enough that it drove my friend, my partner crazy. She was Calvin Klein's mother. The review on a Sunday was all of Calvin Klein's sort of okay suits. And I don't know exactly how much they were, but they were expensive. So Wayne said to me, drive me to the store. And because he didn't drive. And I said, what for? He said, don't worry about it. He changed all the prices and everything was like between $800 and $900. He doubled everything.
I love it.
No one complained. No one complained. And the women were not only buying one suit or something, they would buy a couple of dresses. And then we incorporated through our travels. We had gone to Morocco at one point, and they used to have lovely embroideries that they used to put on some of their clothes, shirts, something. We didn't want those shirts, but we found where they only made the embroidery, which was on fabric. So we used to do caftans and put them on top or on sleeves or something like that. That was unbelievable.
Are you completely self-taught with making patterns and sewing? Did you ever have a class? Because you sound like you knew how to do it from the beginning.
A few people, I mean, there was Jacques Fatt in Paris. He personally didn't teach me, but his premiere at the showroom.
We skipped that part.
I didn't work. I was there because I knew his wife. So she would say, or sneak in and things, because these things are secret, you know. They don't let people in all the time because people could steal their ideas or patterns or something. So I knew quite a few designers because they were all, you know.
Did you still have the store when you met Lily in the Hamptons? Was the store still in existence?
No, the store had been closed for quite a while. We were open for 26 years, I think.
Wow.
21 or 22 years in East Hampton. And then we moved to Watermill because our famous garage, which was now much better looking, someone bought it, and then they were going to give us an increase like crazy.
Sure.
So we went somewhere else. The Watermill worked for about 6-7 years very well. But then our accountant said, he said, well, next year, if you still want the store, you'll have to carry it. So we said, no. Therefore, I worked with a woman and did all our clothes for Bergdorf. And that was for, I don't know, 19 years or something like that. And then the COVID, is that what it's called, that happened. And then I was offered the famous masks.
Tell me your first impression of Lily, Michel.
Absolutely loved her immediately. It didn't take us long. I mean, we have the porch at, you know, there were steps there. We sat there forever and chit-chatted and talked about everything. And it's like we had known each other for years. And it's still
so nice.
And we see things exactly the same way, which is, let's say she will bring some fabric. And let's say we had 5 choices or 4 choices in the thing. And I would pick one of the fabric. And then we would find out that it was exactly the first.
I love that.
That we both liked. It's amazing.
And Lily, what about you? What was your first impression of Michel?
Well, I genuinely thought I was meeting a like older woman named Michel. And so which I thought I had said that to, I'd said that to Michelle. So he was just, honestly, he was so chic. He was wearing, and this was the pandemic, I was like in sweatpants and like roots grown out, and you know, it wasn't a good look, and he was groomed, and I will never forget, he had, instead of a face mask, he had this like beautiful, he makes all of his own napkins, and he'd like wrapped one of his own napkins around his face. And I was like, who is this chic man?
And Lily, what's the most important thing you've learned from Michelle?
Everything. I hope, yeah. Other than everything, he's taught me more than I could ever dream to have been taught. And I would never have gotten the, you know, that one-on-one time with someone as special as Michelle, and someone who's willing to just show his craft. And he's definitely underplayed his history. I mean, he really is self-taught, and there is no one who is more passionate or knows more and puts that into his love of making clothes. And I think arguably that's why we've seen the success we've luckily seen, is because that comes through in the clothes we make. We're just both having genuinely such a great time.
Michelle, will you share what you've learned from Lily?
So much. I don't know how to describe that. It's I learned to be happy.
Aw, that's so nice.
That's,
oh, it's so sweet. Oh, that's making me cry too. Oh.
Michelle, what about my fashion sense? Have you learned? He finds my outfits that I wear sometimes when I come and see him quite interesting.
I like him. And she, I don't know. On somebody else, people, they probably get shot. But with her, she carries it in such a way that it's almost becoming. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Michelle, could you ever have imagined this sort of, not second life, but third or fourth life in this business?
I could have never imagined when her mother said they were adopting me. They meant it. Let me tell you that. Amazing. Aww. I can't even meet anyone unless they appreciate. No, that's not true. That's not true.
You have collaborated to make incredibly beautiful things and brought them into the world, both of you.
I think what has helped with Michelle and mine's partnership, which, you know, a lot of we've been lucky enough to have, is that obviously given his background and his age, we are combining like his vintage patterns and his eye for, you know, back then a level of like couture and design that doesn't always exist in today's, you know, fashion. And so by bringing that and then combining it with not traditional prints and has arguably makes it more fun. And I think it shows the combination of our ages and, you know, how we're able to really just bring that together is
magical. Alchemy. I mean, it really is spectacular. The sustainability and upcycling part of it, is it something that you always wanted to do, or was it something that you did that first time with the towels and you thought, this makes sense, this is something I could see doing for a very long time, and then really committed to it?
I think I looked at the sustainability aspect in a slightly different way. I was looking at it more as, here are these beautiful pieces of fabric that are sitting around for most people. I don't know a lot of people that use the Hermes towels as towels.
I've got some things I can send you.
Yeah, we do customs all the time. So I think I looked at it at first as, these are sitting there, they're already made. We're not having to kind of mass produce and factory make these yards of fabric. Why not give people something that is truly one of a kind, something they can, invest in and hopefully pass down through generations. A lot of people have very sentimental attachments to some of the blankets or towels they've been given. And through that, I think we then saw the sustainability aspect of just providing this one-off piece. And we've always been very, both Michelle and I, but I would say mainly Michelle, has installed in me, like, keep all the fabric, do not let any fabric go to waste. And because of that, we have our Cabana collection. So that's been very important to both of us.
Lily, tell me what's next for the business. What's next for Lily Eve?
Really, we are just planning on keep going. We're keeping the same business model we always have, which is we will continue to be sourcing these vintage and secondhand materials and make, you know, as many beautiful one-of-a-kind pieces as we can. We might be launching a fun new blanket bag soon. We try to always figure out the best ways to use our leftover fabrics. So into our, we call it our Cabana collection, but so there's lots of fun things going on there. And yeah, hopefully it's just more jackets and sourcing the fabrics.
So I have an English woman and a Canadian, and you have sort of a marquee event, I know, in England for your high school usually, or whatever you call your secondary school, a big party. But did you have a prom?
I did. I went to an all-girls school in London, and it was, in terms of a outfit, I mean, I graduated from Parsons, if that's like a prom, but it was.
Well, tell me about your wedding dress.
I actually co-designed with friends of mine who own a brand in New York called Freya Knight. And I knew I wanted to design it myself just because it felt more personal to me. And I'm also not someone that loves wearing dresses. So I knew I had to find some way of making it feel like something I would want to wear. And we did it in a beautiful recycled beaded lace and just went for a very classic slip dress. And then Michelle and I designed this beautiful, like, floor length coat. Ooh. That I wore to the wedding. And then I also re-wore it on my Sunday brunch with jeans. And it's something that, whereas my wedding dress I've already packed up and sealed and I arguably will never, you know, wear again. And I hope not. And will be kept for, you know, future kids or whatever. But the coat is something that I love so much because I've got it in my wardrobe. I love that I can keep on wearing that. And it was just a really fun element. So that was my prom version.
And what was the fabric of the coat?
It was just this beautiful crepe fabric that had when you look close, it had all of this beautiful detailed embroidered flowers. I mean, Michelle and I had a lot of fun / stress making it. I was probably the only bride in history that finished that making their wedding dress on a Wednesday. I got married on a Saturday. So it was all a little tight.
Michelle, since you didn't have a prom, what have you designed for yourself that you've loved for maybe for a gala or a party?
In Quebec, I don't know. It was about maybe 17, maybe 18 at the most. And they were doing a French aristocratic party. So everybody had to be noble, you know, the typical French, blah, 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 blah. And so with me, I decided to dress well. I said, if they're all going to be noble, I'm going to be more noble than they are. So I decided to dress like Marie Antoinette. You know, there's what they call a cage on each side.
Oui, oui.
So I didn't know how to go about that. Well, to show you how willing my father was, willing to me to make clothes, he made the cage.
I love it.
The Chateau Frontenac has beautiful staircases and things like that. There was a friend of my family who had a big business. It was a bakery. They baked the most fabulous, but not expensive cakes. It was the cake that the workers would put on his, bring to work or something like that. They made a fortune. She was absolutely fabulous. So I'm coming down the staircase, and there is that woman. She said, "Oh, mademoiselle, que vous êtes." She didn't recognize me. I was so afraid she would.
I love it.
She would have told my mother.
Well, y'all are so nice to spend the afternoon with me. And I can't wait for y'all to come to Brentwood and hopefully Charlotte as well.
Thank you so much.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.